Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Bio is our monthly series where we take a big, deeply researched and detailed biography and break it down over the course of a week so we can have the time to really discuss and digest the work. So far, we've tackled The Dead Are Arising, the life of Malcolm X, and Eleanor about her life when she was Miss and Mrs. Roosevelt. This week, we will learn a lot about the 39th President of the United States by digging into a 781-page biography called His Very Best, Jimmy Carter, A Life, by award-winning author and filmmaker Jonathan Alter. The book is the first full-length independent biography of Carter. That said, Alter interviewed the former president more than a dozen times, watched him teach Sunday school, read love letters between him and Rosalynn. Alter spoke with those close to Carter personally and professionally. The book dispels myths and clarifies muddy assumptions about Carter. We learn he was a man who had a flinty edge, masked by a toothy grin and simple ways. Alter argues that Carter is one of the smartest men to hold the office of the presidency, and he has a moral compass that will override anything else, for better and for worse, and that may have cost him a second term. As the Washington Post wrote in its review of His Very Best, Alter convincingly demonstrates the upside was an elected official who pursued the public good relentlessly, disregarding the political consequences. Carter believed that there were some things more important than re-election. Today, we start at the beginning. Jimmy Carter was born October 1st, 1924, the eldest of four children to a nurse named Lillian Gordy and a strict Southern father slash businessman called James Earl Carter. Like many things about Carter, where he grew up hasn't been accurately reported. Until he went to college, he lived on a farm in Archery, Georgia, not Plains. In fact, one of the reasons Alter set out to write this book was to correct the record about many incorrect assumptions about Jimmy Carter. Jonathan, you write on the first page that you wanted to go beyond the superficial assessment of Jimmy Carter. What were those superficial assessments, and what did you find fundamentally lacking in those assessments?
Well, there's a what I would call a conventional wisdom about Jimmy Carter, which is unsuccessful president, great, inspiring former president. And I just thought that was way oversimplified, and that actually, as president, he was a political failure, but a substantive and far-sighted success. And as a former president, he has been inspirational. But as I think we're going to find out with Donald Trump, former presidents don't have any power. They don't really have that much leverage. And so he actually has gotten less accomplished as a former president. And I also think there was this misconception of him that he was kind of this weak guy, maybe because people remember him in that Mr. Rogers sweater, you know, which mm-hmm. was actually very popular at the time. There's nothing weak about Jimmy Carter. He is a tough guy, sometimes an SOB, and this is a huge misconception about him. There's actually a tremendous amount of complexity there. So what really surprised me was the layered quality of his life and career, and that kept me fascinated throughout my research.
He was actually from Archery, Georgia, not Plains. That's good for a Jeopardy question in the future. And he grew up on a farm. He had the nickname Hot from Hot Shot, given to him by his father. So why was this a plus for young Jimmy Carter to be considered a hot shot by his father? And why was it a minus?
Jimmy's father, Earl Carter, was a white supremacist and very tough disciplinarian. His mother, Ms. Lillian, who later went on Johnny Carson when he was president because she was so amusing, she took care of black patients for free. But his father was tough. And when he called him hot or hotshot, it was simultaneously, you know, because he was bound for success, good at pretty much everything he tried to do. But it also had a little bit of a putting him in his place quality. Hey, hotshot. And that double-edged quality to that, I think, always reminded him that he wasn't getting his father's approval, although he desperately wanted it.
You mentioned his mother, Ms. Lillian, was a nurse who actually delivered Rosalind. We'll talk about that in a minute. And, you know, she became a character for this sort of straight-talking, one-liner delivering firecracker of a lady. How did she mother Jimmy and her other children?
Well, she believed that parents coddled their children too much. So she was often off working as a nurse to the point where there was a table in their front hall. And Jimmy and his two sisters, his brother Billy Carter wasn't born yet. He's 13 years younger. They called the table mother. And yet he also respected the work that she did. And I think his later interest in global health, which has been such an important part of his post-presidency, he got from watching his mother as a nurse. She was also just an eccentric character, like out of a Eudora Welty novel. And you know, the eccentricities in this family were pretty fascinating. At one point in 1975, Billy Carter, who loved doing interviews with you know, reporters, said, you know, my mother went into the Peace Corps at age 68. I got one sister who's a holy roller, Sister Ruth, and another one who rides with the Hell's Angels. That's Gloria. So my brother thinks he's going to be president of the United States. I'm the only normal one in the whole family.
What part of Jimmy Carter's upbringing on this farm shaped his political persona? What was useful about this life for him as he got into politics?
Well, first of all, he didn't want to be in politics when he was a boy. I mean, his first ambition was to be the best farmer that he could be and to please his father. And then he developed a fixation on going to the U.S. Naval Academy, which he did. He became almost preternaturally competent at whatever he undertook. And if you're going to be a successful farmer, you have to be a jack of all trades. You have to be able to do a lot of things well and figure out a problem, like why are these crops not growing, and then a solution to the problem. And Carter eventually became an engineer, but even that interest in engineering and problem solving that he took into the presidency, where he would turn even, you know, peace between Israel and Egypt into essentially an engineering project, that really started on the farm, and he became a world-class problem solver.
My guest, Jonathan Alter, the name of his book is His Very Best, Jimmy Carter, A Life. It becomes clear early on the book that while his birth parents were present, he had other adults who shaped his character and really, you know, came to define him. I want to ask you about a few. Two of the most influential people in his young life were Black, Bishop William Decker Johnson of the African Methodist Episcopal Church and Rachel Clark. He only knew the bishop when he was young, but he was struck by his success and his education. Why was this stunning to a young Jimmy Carter? Why would it make such an impression at the time?
Well, nobody in Jimmy Carter's family had ever gone to college. And so suddenly, when he's a young boy, a big event in Archery, Georgia, population 25, would be when this bishop, a big shot in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, came to town. And this bishop was highly educated and had been actually a child prodigy. traveled all over the world. There was a photograph of him at the Eiffel Tower that just stunned young Jimmy, the idea that somebody could go abroad. And so the first truly successful person in his life was black. But because he was black, he wasn't allowed into the Carter home except from the back door, which he would was too dignified and proud to ever use. So when Jimmy's father wanted to talk to the bishop and he had respect for him, they would do so from the bishop's car or under a tree outside the Carter farmhouse, and sort of meet on neutral territory so that they could abide by the Jim Crow segregationist customs that prevented him from going through the front door. When Bishop Johnson died, there were Packards and Cadillacs from all over the country lined up for his funeral. And it was the biggest event of Jimmy's childhood when he was about 11 years old. In any event, Bishop Johnson's success, that somebody from such a small community could be that successful and travel around the world, that fired Jimmy's imagination.
A woman named Rachel Clark, you describe her as a surrogate mother. Jimmy Carter said at her funeral, "I knew Rachel Clark in many ways better than my mother." Why?
Well, Lillian Carter was not a hugely attentive parent. And Rachel Clark, whom Jimmy described in a book he wrote a few years ago as reminding him of an African queen, she introduced him to his love of nature and also had a lot to do with his spiritual development. And they would, both of these things obviously were enormously important in his life. I mean, he grew up to become arguably our greatest environmental president, and I'm including Theodore Roosevelt in that. If you look at the actual record of what he did for the environment as governor and president. And of course, he was arguably our most religious president, prayed as often as 30 times a day, though a strong believer in the separation of church and state. So Rachel had immense influence on him. It wasn't until after his mother, whom he also revered, died in the 80s that Carter started to tell people how much he loved Rachel Clark. And there's some video of him weeping at Rachel Clark's grave in Plains. And when I discussed Rachel Clark with Jimmy Carter, he became pretty emotional. And it's clear that he regarded her as a third parent.
My guest is Jonathan Alter. The name of his new biography is His Very Best, Jimmy Carter, A Life. Rosalind Carter and Jimmy Carter have been married for how many years now? As of January 2021?
74 years.
74 years. They've known each other longer than that. Miss Lillian delivered Rosalind. As part of this book, you were privy to letters that he wrote to her while he was in the Navy. What did you glean from those letters about their relationship?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I was stunned to get those letters from Mrs. Carter. They are the most steamy, intimate love letters exchanged between a future president and first lady in American history. And they make John Adams' letters to Abigail look pretty tame by comparison. So the letters that he wrote from the Navy when he was at sea are a window into his emotions. And at one point in one of my more than a dozen interviews with Jimmy Carter, he said to me, "You know, I don't really express my feelings very much outside of my poetry. I have a hard time expressing my feelings." And so that's one of the reasons he turned to poetry as a former president. But in those letters, they're full of feeling, full of not just longing for his wife, but real emotion. And you glimpse, even when they're quarreling a little bit in the letters, you glimpse the intensity of their now 75-year love affair. And she became the most influential first lady in history at that time. Now, you could argue that maybe after her, Hillary Clinton was more influential, but she had many more responsibilities, for instance, in the White House than Eleanor Roosevelt did. And she was much closer to her husband than Eleanor Roosevelt was to Franklin. And she was responsible for a considerable amount of policy on mental health and age discrimination and vaccination of school children and other issues. But it's mostly that connection, which, you know, when I interviewed them together, I could see it was that even when he would sometimes snap at his wife, which wasn't very nice of him, his eyes would light up when she came into the room. And their connection across all these years it's just an astonishing love story. And then in the post-presidency, she's accompanied him to more than 100 countries. And she takes notes and is his partner, you know, in all of his meetings with foreign leaders. And she also often takes a leadership role in their activities overseas. And of course, she works with him on Habitat for Humanity projects. I built a house with them in Memphis and was, you know, a little bit afraid of Carter because he would come over and instruct me on how to drive a nail more properly. But you know, Rosalind, I could see, was really adept. I mean, she built many houses by that point. But, you know, so she's right in there doing everything with him. They didn't actually start going out until he was in the Navy, but they met 3 days after she was born in 1927 because Ms. Lillian, Jimmy's mother, delivered her. And then 3 days later, she brought her 2.5-year-old over to see the new baby. And Rosalind then became friends with Jimmy's sister, Ruth, and kind of pined away for Jimmy when from afar when he was in the Navy. Then on vacation, they started going out. And one thing that I think of many things that people don't know about this enormously formidable woman is that she had and has much better political judgment than her husband. Hmm. And if he had listened to her political advice more, and this is something that is confirmed by all of his aides who admire the former first lady, and that's not always or even often the case. Normally, aides consider the spouse to be intrusive. That was not the case here. When they would be trying to deliver a message to the president, they would often use Rosalind to say, you know, don't do this. It's politically unpopular. Wait for a second term. And he was pretty often too stubborn to listen to their advice. And at one point I asked Mrs. Carter, you know, is your husband stubborn? And she just laughed. Everybody knows that. How stubborn he is.
Jimmy Carter had a tough father. He was a tough father. You write, one of his sons said it was harder being the son of Jimmy Carter than being the son of an American president. What was difficult about being a son, and why was he so hard on his kids?
Well, you know, his father had used a peach tree switch to give him a whipping when he would do something wrong as a boy. For instance, he stole a couple of pennies from the collection plate and he got whipped for that. And I don't think even his worst enemies would ever say he did anything crooked after that. And You know, his honesty, of course, is a big part of his appeal. And so because his father was a stern taskmaster and because he came from a certain generation, he was a real disciplinarian with his three sons. People tend to think, oh, I remember Amy Carter. Well, she came along much later as Billyad in Jimmy's family. She wasn't born until 1967. Jack, Chip, and Jeff, the Carter's three sons, were born in the late 40s and early 50s. And Jimmy would use a paddle on them. And Chip told me that this paddle, which came from a period when Miss Lillian was the house mother at a fraternity at Auburn University, needless to say, an all-white fraternity and an all-white university at that time, she gave Jimmy the paddle, and Chip, after he'd get paddled, could see the initials of the fraternity, AE, in the mirror in reverse, bruise on his thigh or wherever. So he didn't, you know, beat them all the time, but he did. He was very tough with them, very demanding. And they had up and down relationships with him. And not Amy. By the time Amy came along, he partly because Jack blew up at him and insisted that he not treat Amy the way he had treated his sons, he was much better with Amy. But he was also a product of his generation, and he was a product of his experience working in the nuclear Navy for Admiral Hyman Rickover, who was one of the toughest, meanest, most difficult, and most brilliant and successful military officers in the history of this country. But he was so difficult. And Carter was never as bad as Rickover in terms of the way he mistreated people, but he could also be very difficult. And when I asked Jeff Carter, his younger son, to describe his father in one word, the word he used was intense. And I thought that was very consistent with what I heard about Carter from the more than 250 people I interviewed who had dealt with him a lot. And he wasn't always intense. Mm-hmm. He's zen. Yeah. That's what I mean by that complexity that he has. Depending on the circumstances, you could get a very different Jimmy Carter, one who is either warm or cold, relaxed or intense. And this is all part of him. He contains multitudes, and that's what one of the things that makes him such an interesting subject for a biography.
Conversation with Jonathan Alter about his biography, his very best life, his very best Jimmy Carter all life, for our monthly series, Full Bio. Tomorrow, we continue our conversation with a look at Jimmy Carter's early political career and his complex views on race.